Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of
mouth.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Last year, 18 senators left office for various reasons. 12 of them were considered moderates, including Democrat Kent Conrad from North Dakota, who said farewell to his colleagues in December.
I have detected over the 26 years I've been here a change. We spend now too much of our time seeking partisan advantage, and it happens on both sides. We spend too little time trying to solve problems.
It was just one sour note in an otherwise gracious speech, but reflected public disdain for a political system paralyzed by partisanship. Charles Whelan thinks the time is ripe for an insurgency of the moderate middle. The author and senior lecturer at Dartmouth has written The Centrist Manifesto. It's a book that calls for taking politics back from the noisy extremes. It's his strategy for breaking congressional gridlock and restoring faith in American politics. Charles Whelan, welcome back to Word of Mouth.
Good to be back with you.
I don't think we need to cite any polls to know that Americans think Congress is broken. So if so polarized, what leads you to think that this magic middle, as some term it, exists?
Well, we've got a confluence of things going on right now. One, which folks are eminently aware of, is a series of problems that we're going to have to wrestle with. That's the fiscal situation, the rising cost of entitlements, climate change, and so on. As a policy person, what characterizes those problems is that we're not doing anything. There's no right answer, but the middle, kind of the pragmatists who think about solving problems, agree that there are a range of things we could and should be doing, all of which are better than what we're doing now. So it's the kind of real problems we have to address. Then there's the related political paralysis, which you alluded to in the intro, which is while we should be solving these problems, you have the two extremes seeking political advantage, as Kent Conrad pointed out, and nothing's getting done. And then the third piece is most Americans are fed up with both of those things. They want to solve problems, and they don't associate with the political tails.
Okay, well, you've got us in your Centrist Manifesto, pages and pages of what government should be doing, what individuals and business cannot do, promoting free trade, respecting markets, fixing health care, fixing infrastructure. What is the Centrist Party platform? How do we get there?
One of the key ideas is it's not good enough, nor will it be effective, to just not be a Republican or a Democrat. So we do have a growing swath of the electorate who describe themselves variously as independents, as moderates, as pragmatists. But increasingly, they say that neither the Republicans or Democrats stand for what they believe in. I don't think that's good enough because you have to organize around some ideas and do something positive, as opposed to simply not being something else. So the idea behind a centrist movement or even a centrist party with a capital C would be to take the best of both parties because there is a lot really good about the core ideas in each party. What do we like about the Republicans? Well, we like their respect for wealth creation, their respect for personal responsibility, a healthy skepticism of what government can and cannot accomplish, and so on. Well, what would we cleave off? Well, for a lot of folks in the middle, the Republicans are out of sync with their views on social issues. They're in denial on climate change and so on. We can do the same thing for the Democrats. I would argue the Democrats' heart is in the right place, that as a country we need to be concerned about income inequality and social mobility and so on. The Democrats are too close to the teachers' unions and some other unions who stand in the way of some of the wealth creation that's really important for the middle class. The Democrats have not moved as quickly or as vocally as they should on rising entitlement costs. So take the best of what we like. If you want to put it on a bumper sticker, it's kind of the brain of the Republicans, the heart of the Democrats, and let's create a new movement of the middle around those powerful and good ideas.
Well, you're calling for, you say in the book, a hard reset, you know, but the very nature of moderation when we talk about it, reasonableness, is milquetoast, right? This is not something that appeals to people. Remember the calls for Obama to get mad and to stand up to the Republican or the Republicans, not to move on what Obama is asking for in terms of tax cuts. How do you bridge that sort of, I guess, emotional gap?
I think this is the real question, and I'm not certain that people will actually do what they should do. They're angrier than they were 5 years ago. They're angrier than they were 10 years ago. But The Economist did a piece on this book and other movements trying to coalesce folks in the middle. And it began by saying, what do we want? Incremental change. When do we want it? In due time. And the whole point was, you know, people who are moderate don't generally show up in the streets, you know, wielding swords and placards. But the problems that I identified at the outset are serious. They're like termites in the basement. The longer we wait, the more serious they're going to become. People are clearly angry. They're clearly angrier than they've ever been before. And although we don't need polls, we know that Congress is less popular than ever before. So the question is, are people in the middle who are fed up actually going to do something about it? And this is one course of action that I think is a reasonable approach.
All right, so let's jump to the real world then, where Republicans in the Senate recently defeated a bipartisan amendment to expand background checks on private gun sales and at gun shows in defiance of majority opinion. So this is the question, Charles Whelan. Does it matter what the moderate majority actually thinks?
At present, the answer is no, and that's the motivation for why we're having this conversation. The strategy behind a centrist movement is every bit as important as the substance, which we just discussed. And the strategy revolves around the Senate. And the idea is that most third-party movements have focused on the presidency. In this country, the presidency is a fool's errand. The Electoral College makes it nearly impossible for a third party to get elected president. But the same basic civics lesson tells us that the Senate is different entirely. You only need 34% of the vote, a plurality, to be elected as a U.S. senator. There are at least 20 states right now that have one Democratic senator and one Republican senator, or a governor of one party and a senator of the other. That tells us, like much of New England, that these are states that would be amenable to a centrist Senate candidate. Angus King was elected as an independent and essentially a centrist in Maine, as you know. Mm-hmm. The idea is to focus on those states where a centrist candidate would do well, elect five or six centrist senators, and at that point, the U.S. Senate is, imagine, say, 46 Republicans, six centrists, and 48 Republicans, or so, something along those lines, where the centrists become the equivalent of Anthony Kennedy in the Supreme Court. The center at that point holds sway.
We're talking to Charles Whelan. He's senior lecturer at Dartmouth and author of Naked Statistics, and more recently, a book called The Centrist Manifesto. Now, third-party candidates don't generally do well in electoral politics. How would the centrist party be different?
Well, the first point is just to forget about the presidency, as I just mentioned. But imagine a Senate candidate. New Hampshire would be a pretty good state. New England, in fact, because the old kind of moderate Republicans have been drummed out, is a place where there is a hunger for the center. But imagine a Senate campaign in any state, and it would unfold as usual, where in the primaries, the Republican candidate goes far right because you've got to placate the base. That's where the money comes from. That's who shows up in the primaries. The Democrats do the same. They go hard left. And then they expect that they can do the etch-a-sketch. I mean, this is one of Mitt Romney's great contributions to electoral politics, is this nomenclature of rushing back to the center because nobody's there. And you're going to win the independent voters because that's who determines who wins the election ultimately. Except now, inject a centrist candidate from the beginning. So while the Republicans are going hard right and the Democrats are going hard left, the centrist has been focused on the middle the whole time. And when the two candidates try and rush back to the center for the general election, that political real estate is already taken. And again, all that centrist has to do is hold the 30 or 40% of folks who describe themselves as moderates of the middle, and we now have one more centrist senator.
Well, you're talking about reasonable Republicans, reasonable moderates in the New England states. Olympia Snowe left, you know, in frustration, wrote a big op-ed last year about why she left. Yes, Angus King did triumph, but, you know, I'm reading here in New Hampshire a lot of people warning Republican Senator Kelly Ayotte that she's going to lose or win next election based on her vote against the background check bill in the Senate. Now, the politics of revenge are at play here. Again, this sort of question of you're calling on pragmatism, you're calling on a sort of rational process, whereas it sounds like so many people are voting or remembering or, you know, burying the hatchet, but burying it only 2 inches deep on emotion, based on emotion.
We know, though, historically, that the Senate has been a more amicable chamber. And I'm glad that you played that clip from Kent Conrad's retirement speech, because for many, many years, we could count on the Senate having a working group of Republicans and Democrats who would come together, craft bipartisan legislation, and then either sell it to their respective parties or cobble together enough votes to get it done. If that were still the case, I don't think we'd need a centrist party. My fear is that because of the institutional structures and the role of money from your party and other factors, we've lost it. And I think the best way to recreate that sense is to create a new party that would play the role that that bipartisan middle used to play.
Now, Charles, you've run for office before. Former Chicago resident, you ran for the congressional seat vacated by Rahm Emanuel when he was appointed Obama's chief of staff. The centrist manifesto kind of reads like it's written by someone who's preparing to run for office. Are you?
No. Anybody who's run for office knows that they don't want to do it again. So my goal is to flesh out other candidates for whom this resonates so that they'll run for office and I don't have to. One of the subtexts of the book is how truly awful we've made it to run, in particular because of the fundraising. Most of the other aspects are actually quite enjoyable. It's great to be engaged in the system. The small-scale fundraising, the $100, the $200, is actually, I think, very healthy for the system. But the expensive campaigns, the role of big money, the, at this point, totally elusive nature of any kind of fundraising limits makes it a really, really unattractive thing to do. And I think that's unfortunate. I think it's very unhealthy for the system overall.
Charles Whelan, senior lecturer at Dartmouth, author of Naked Economics and Naked Statistics. His latest book is The Centrist Manifesto. And Charles, thank you for speaking with us today.
That was a pleasure. Thank you.
There's much more in the book and the fledgling political movement at wordofmouthradio.org.